This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 13, where we'll discuss cloud security.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey, so what's going on, AC?
Oh my goodness, I have had a good few days. My last time we talked, I was in the final throes of my advanced workflow class that was publishing with Pluralsight. And the good news is that that course just went live actually within just a few seconds of us starting this recording. So by the time people hear it, it's going to be live and blog posts are up. But my challenge that I had was that I found out that right after the last time we talked, they had an issue with my course because it was too long. I actually put too much content in it. And so the biggest topic, it's a great problem to have, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So the biggest thing that we had was that I had one module that had over 3 hours of content, and that was doing workflow and web services together. And there's a lot of really, really cool stuff in there about working with authenticated web services, working with the SharePoint REST API from workflows, working with the Salesforce REST API, and then creating your own secured web services for use in workflows and apps, all in SharePoint 2013. So what we ended up doing was splitting that out into a second course. So that'll be going live, or that'll be available for people to grab soon. It's content complete, and we're just kind of going through the final kind of tidying stuff up and putting the polish on things at the end to get it live. But fired up, man. People have been bugging me about this one for good reason, because it took me a lot longer than I said it would. But they're both done. One of them is live, and hopefully the other one will be live by the time this episode goes live.
Nice milestone to hit. That must have been a ton of work. So yeah, well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Very much appreciated.
All right. So I've been sort of having a couple of things going on. Getting ready for SharePoint conference. Starting to work on a little bit of content for that. I'm doing a couple of sessions. One on sort of Yammer development. And the other on a new feature in Windows Server called the Web App Proxy. So I'll blog about it. I won't bore everybody with the details here, but I'm building up those presentations and demos and that sort of thing.
Cool.
And then the second thing I had going on is, you already know about this, AC, but I went and stupidly updated my graphics drivers on my laptop a couple of days ago. And it's all very well and good in most Windows machines, except when you have a temperamental MacBook, as I do. And so it's very finicky about the graphics drivers. Anyway, so I installed the latest ones, and now the thing won't boot. And so it sits on, you know, starting up Windows, the little donut you get with the flag mm-hmm. as it's booting. And I can't even boot into safe mode to roll back the drivers, so I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do. I think I've switched to a Surface Pro to sort of get productive again. I couldn't wait around to fix it. And fortunately, Go Cloud, all my files are not necessarily all on my laptop. There are a few things I need to get off it, but for the most part, it's all cloud-based stuff or on a network share somewhere. So I'm pretty safe. But yeah, I've got to figure out how to get a couple of remaining things off this laptop and be done with it.
Wow, so, that's not fun.
What a pain.
That's not fun.
You know,
fun.
Normally I just roll into safe mode and roll back the drivers, but even that ain't working.
You know, I actually got to witness this too, because I guess I forgot one more little update that is, I guess, a co-update for the two of us was the fact that, I guess last weekend, you and I kind of hauled ourselves up in a hotel in a very snowy and frigid place in the Midwest to work on our startup curb. And it was really, I really walked out of that pumped up. We got, you know, people should start to see a few more updates coming from us. But I mean, we got sprints defined. We got nice sketchups defined. I'm really fired up. So people will start to see a lot more stuff coming out about that if you're interested.
Yeah, you said hold up in a hotel with it snowing outside. It almost sounds romantic, you know?
No, it wasn't. No, there was no romantic. There was nothing romantic about it, but there was no incentive to leave. We did get to see a train catch on fire, which is kind of cool, but...
That was pretty interesting. That's the first time I've ever seen a train on fire.
Yeah, so. While it was driving, too.
I'll never forget that taxi ride where the guy starts slowing down right next to the train on fire, and I'm like, would you mind speeding up just in case this thing kind of gets bigger?
I love his response too. I've never seen a train on fire. I wanted to see it. Like, not right next to it, dude. Can we keep going? We're on the highway. Everybody else is going
Perfect
like 90
idea.
We're going like 10 now. Come on, let's get
when
out
when something big is on fire, don't stop right next to it. That's a good rule for life. Anyway, so on to today's topic of conversation, which we sort of we summarized as cloud security. But what we want to do is just really discuss a number of cloud security related topics as we go through this show. We have a listener question as well that we're going to address as well. But this is a very topical conversation right now, especially with everything going on in the news. There seems to be a new headline every day about the NSA and about all these different, internet providers and service providers that people use, like Facebook and Microsoft and Google and all that sort of stuff. So we thought we'd just throw a few topics for conversation out there and see what each other thinks. So how about we get started?
Sounds good. Let's go.
So the first thing I think I thought would be worth discussing is around and how it relates to cloud security is around like things like data sovereignty and really where the location of the cloud is. And often, when you use a service on the internet like Facebook, it's very hidden away how it all works behind the scenes to the average user. And you really don't know where the servers are that you're dealing with, nor should you care, in my view, for the average user, at least anyway. And so the topic of conversation comes up, especially around security, where you upload data into these services, and sometimes it's important to know exactly where it goes. And so some of the reasons why that might be important are for things like legal reasons. Certain countries around the world have laws relating to certain types of data and what you can do with it and where you can stick it. So for example, like in New Zealand, I believe, and I'm not 100% up to speed with exactly what their law says, but I hear from some friends back there that there are certain types of tax related and financial data that you can't store necessarily outside of the country without certain levels of exemptions. And a really good example of this is a small and medium business accounting package called Xero.com, Xero.com. It's a great startup that's making leaps and bounds in the cloud accounting realm, taking on the likes of Intuit and so on. And they deal with financial data and tax data. And so they've had to go and get an exemption from the New Zealand government to be able to store that information on servers in the States. And I believe they host at Rackspace, if I'm not mistaken. And so that's an issue in a lot of different countries. But so what have you heard on this? Have you come across this much when you're talking with folks? And what are the sort of concerns that you've heard about?
What I'm about to say to sound like I'm dismissing it, but I hear developers and people who are building systems, I hear them bring it up a lot more than what the businesses actually encounter. But that's not to say that issues aren't unfounded. So, I mean, to give you an example, it is a big deal. I mean, I know of two concrete examples. One is I did a little bit of work with one of the major oil and gas companies, one of the global oil and gas companies. And I know the other ones are all subject to the same rules. But a lot of the exploration happens in some countries that may not be as friendly to where the company originates from. So I know that there's some countries that require that if you're doing geological stuff in their country, or if you're doing anything about taking resources out of the country, the data has to reside in that country. It cannot leave. And so I know where, you know, they look at something like, in these cases, they were looking at SharePoint and they could not use Office 365 because they didn't know where the data was. They had to use on-prem deployments. Another case that I heard, actually had from about 2 years ago, I had a customer, when I was teaching a class in Boston, I had a guy, who I got to be friends with, was in my class. We just started talking on a break and he said something along the lines of, asked me how much I traveled. And at the time it was pretty bad. It was like 60 or 70%. And he said, yeah, that's about me too. And I'm like, really, what do you do? And he said, well, I do this. I work for this one hedge fund company and I have to go around to all of our data centers. So usually when you hear all of our data centers, a flag goes up and it's just like, usually you don't have many of those unless you're Microsoft or Google or somebody like that. So long story short, what he did is he had to go to around the 7 to 10 to 15, 17, for some reason 17 keeps sticking in my head, different data centers around the world that this company had. And he had to do it to exchange, to not only go through and monitor stuff that was going on, but also to be a courier to moving data around. And the reason for that is because certain things that this hedge fund company did in, say, for instance, the Cayman Islands, or in Antigua, or in the United States, or in Russia, or whatever, those things, certain like investment stuff may be legal in one country, but it may not be legal in another country. And when I was like, well, why can't you just ship the data? He said, well, sometimes we got a bunch of tapes and we can't ship it. I'm like, why not? And he said, try taking something from somewhere in the Caribbean and shipping it to Europe without it being on a plane touching Miami. And I thought about it. And it's like everything in the Caribbean goes through Miami as like the gateway for North America into South America and vice versa. So they'd have to do special things. He said he had been to Turkey or Istanbul 3 or 4 times, but had never set foot out of the airport. He basically would come out of the plane, show up, get on the other side of security, hand a box of tapes to someone. They would give him another ticket, another box of tapes, and he turned right back around and get back on a plane and go somewhere else. He never was in Turkey for more than about 7 hours on 4 different trips. So
interesting. Yeah, I'd never really thought about that, you know, bouncing through another country and the implications that that might have.
It was a fascinating conversation.
I think it's this is an interesting topic because, you know, like you say, I think, you know, some of it is founded and some of it is unfounded. I think typically, my experience is that companies in the States don't necessarily care about this as much as companies in other countries. And I think the reason is because a lot of the time, countries in the States are using services in the States and they're already subject to these laws regardless. So, or the US laws anyway. Whereas, you know, some other countries in Europe and so forth have much more strict rules on you know, privacy and sharing of data and things like that. And I think using a service or a provider in the States is a much bigger deal to those guys for that reason. And, you know, I'm speaking, you know, my own personal thoughts on this, but it's it seems to be one of the common threads. I mean, cloud location, this is really what it comes down to, right, is where does your stuff sit? And one interesting thing that I saw when I worked at Microsoft was, we get these large companies that wanted to use Microsoft services like Office 365 and Azure and so forth. And some of them were quite big accounts, obviously, and was a customer worth a lot to Microsoft. And so they'd even do things like you could, as part of a deal, get a data center tour from kind of like an audit, right, where the company's security people, whether that be physical security or data security or whoever it happens to be, security team in general, would be able to come to the Microsoft data center that was going to host their data. So say it was Office 365, right? There's 4 or 5 locations around the world where that resides in different data centers. So your tenant in 365 might live in the Singapore data center, for example. So you could arrange a data center tour where your security folks could go and see the Microsoft data center. They could assess the sort of the protocols and the procedures and things like that that we use to run it, both from like physical security and you know, other aspects about how it's run and everything. so they could get a bit of reassurance that Microsoft were doing it right.
Mm.
And that was typically in things like banking. Banking and finance was one that, you know, they're very picky about that stuff and wanted to see where their stuff would sit. And so, yeah, you'd think one customer's done it, they'd ask another customer and they'd use the same results, but each one seems to want to go. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah.
Actually going and seeing where your stuff lives. As far as I know, I've never heard that happening with Google. That very may well be the case, and maybe somebody can correct me. But from what I understand, it's much more, it's not nearly as transparent where your stuff lives in a lot of the Google services that, that you know, Microsoft understand that big enterprises are going to need this sort of level of transparency.
Yeah, I think that I remember I've read a bunch of stuff and again, I could be totally wrong by this because I think I read this article maybe a year or so ago, but there was something about that it was an exclusive or a very rare thing where someone got to tour a Google data center, and it wasn't it wasn't so much to see your where your data resides. It was more or less seeing how they do a data center. Because they very much, like I believe, like Facebook, they very much have kind of reinvented their concept of a data center where if you read like that whole In the Plex book, which is kind of like a history on Google where they went through and when they were standing up their data centers, they actually were building their own machines. They weren't buying them off the rack. And like they have like just racks of motherboards and drives and RAM. They don't have like cases around them or any of that kind of stuff. So, but
yeah, very, very highly specialized, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but what you were saying, that's very cool that you can do that with Microsoft to be able to see those things. I haven't seen, I've never heard of somebody that actually did that, but it's pretty slick.
Yeah, yeah. So moving along to the next topic, I read an article today, or at least saw the sort of the synopsis and the title. Again, you know, another day, another article about what the NSA are up to. And you know, the revelations and things that are coming out about Edward Snowden. And the one I saw today was about the NSA's ability to modify data on a hard drive without touching it. And not even, you know, over a wire. I'm talking about like beam me up, Scotty type stuff, and using radio waves or something to that effect, modifying bits of data on a hard drive. And this just blew my mind. I mean, this is like Jetsons material. I don't know if you're familiar with that show.
Oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Of course. Okay, I am. Cool.
So this is like this is very, very scary stuff. This means not only can they use those little chips and bits and bobs that they've got for hacking your network or getting to the data they want over a physical medium, but also just roll up in a van next to your corporate building with a bunch of servers in it and sniff your data or modify it, which I thought was a huge leap beyond what we've been talking about for the last few months, which was more related to using physical methods for getting access to things.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, I guess how would you defend against something like that? You could, if it's radio waves, then I guess you could do some sort of, I wonder if like the noise canceling concept would help with that, where you do like an opposite wave going back at it, or you've got hardened data center that blocks all that,
or you need to put, you know, like a Faraday cage around your data center around your server room.
And I know that I guess you say radio waves. I wonder, and I'm not nearly smart enough to know the differences here, but I know that you could do with cell phone communication, and I think radio is the same way. I spent about a year working at one of the intelligence agencies, not the NSA, but working at one of the intelligence agencies detachments for the United States on a Navy base. And I know that we had a pretty significant asset that we were in charge of for the military. And what there was a thing where once you went onto the rack, onto the server floor, there were things in the tiles under the raised floor that were actively combating cell phone and pagers and any kind of transmission coming in. So when I was on the deck, we called it the deck. When I was on the deck, I would never get a cell phone call. It would never work. I could never make a call. Everything was just completely scrambled. Sometimes you would try, you know, your phone would ring and you try and answer it, but it was so garbled that it was, I mean, it was ridiculous. It was just, it was completely useless. So a lot of times we just would leave our phones at our desk and put them on mute because everybody in there, it was all, there were like real physical phones all over the place and you had to call somebody. And so a lot of protection that way. I wonder if that would be a way to combat it. But, you know, it's interesting, the NSA thing about them snooping on your data and stuff, and the reports that you hear about how they were able to kind of jump into the communication between data centers, between two Google data centers or two Microsoft data centers, to intercept stuff that was going on. I mean, you know, in one sense, I guess there's two ways you can look at it. First, there's the question of, is this even something that the government should be doing? And is this even legitimate? And they're saying, you know, you should stop doing this, you shouldn't be allowed to do this. Well, you know, that's fine. But in one sense, having this stuff coming out to be the light of day says that, number one, this stuff is possible, and two, it helps companies understand what they need to do to protect themselves better. Because let's face it, I know that NSA is doing it. They have a lot of tools at their disposal, but a lot of this stuff is all just technology. And so how hard would it be for some hacker in whatever country to be able to tap in and get into that same kind of communication back and forth, but they don't create a bunch of PowerPoint documents and store them on a network where some little contractor can go rip the stuff off? It's going to happen eventually. It's kind of like the same thing. If you think about it, like nuclear weapons, right? You can tell when someone's working on nuclear weapons because you have to test them. And those fire off, you know, seismic things. And they're saying, oh, no, that's got a certain signature of testing an atomic bomb underground. Mm-hmm. These other things.
Big bada boom.
Yeah. These things of intercepting traffic going back and forth. I mean, how would you even know that was even happening if you were able to kind of get in there and sniff it? So, you know, once to kind of look at it and say, well, that's cool they figured it out, and it's cool they were able to exploit it for a while, and it's cool that we all now know about it so we can all kind of protect against that stuff. So,
it's a very complicated topic, right? One thing I hear a lot is, you know, not necessarily people asking me, but also just hearing what people are talking about is saying, oh, you know, I don't trust Microsoft because of this, or I don't trust Google. I hear that more. I don't trust Google, but you know, and I said, you know, I don't trust these big providers anymore because of this. And I was like, well, that's kind of a bit odd because what they're really trying to say is, you know, I'd rather control my own data and somehow that's going to protect me. I think is a very fine line of crazy because, you know, to me, I've always sort of been a big proponent of using a larger provider to do things like this, you know, store your data and process it and provide these services, because I feel like they do a much better job at it than most people can do by themselves. And that also goes for things like security and stuff. And then people will say, well, but they've got these sort of backdoor deals with the government and stuff to provide data or provide access. And it's like, yeah, but if you seriously think that's the rule that's stopping these people from getting your data, you're sorely, sorely mistaken, right? They'd be getting it without agreement or with agreement regardless, right? Like, and if you think it's just a cloud problem, you're also sorely mistaken. Like, if they want your stuff on-prem, they're going to get it regardless. Like, I don't think you're any more secure doing it yourself. Let's put it that way.
I don't either. I completely agree. And in fact, you know, you rarely does an organization, except for the very, very large ones, rarely does an organization do everything on their own. Rarely are you going to have someone on your staff that all they think about, or have that person have their own staff that all they think about is protecting the assets of the company and trying to compromise their own stuff to protect against it. I think that while that data is very important to a company, and while it could result in, you know, the company going under, I think that having that, relying on someone like Microsoft, relying on someone like Google, on Amazon, or whoever one of these big cloud providers are, I think that relying on somebody like that, they're the ones that are staying up at night going, this could completely tank our business, tens of thousands of employees, if we have a massive, massive compromise here. I mean, you look at like some of those things where that we've heard about, like some of those Bitcoin exchanges that have been hacked and people go through and steal the money from those. They don't exist anymore. I mean, they're gone. That money's gone and no one has any faith in them again. So you look at like what Target's dealing with right now and the level of trust and stuff that people have with Target.
My goodness, yeah.
And you just, it's a level of trust. The stuff's going to get out. I mean, you can't take the approach that my stuff is always going to be secure. You need to think about how you're dealing with it. Do you put everything inside of your Microsoft cloud, or does it make sense to spread it out across multiple clouds so that if Microsoft gets hacked, then you're safe with some stuff over in Azure. You didn't lose 100% of the keys of the kingdom. You only lost part of them. So I don't know. I mean, it's a big challenge to have, but I think that, like you said, I completely agree about people having this false sense of security saying that, oh, we'll just run it ourselves and we'll be in a much better state. Yeah.
You got to be kidding me. It's like people that say they can run their servers better than Google or Microsoft. That makes me laugh as well.
I do.
Like, it's, you know, nice one. You've done a really good job, no doubt. Brilliant. But I absolutely guarantee you the people that make this stuff can run their stuff better than you can.
Yep.
And it might not feel like that at times. I totally understand that. But if you look at the hard facts, I suspect you'll find that, most organizations don't run their infrastructure better than the guys that build it. And it's, like you say, same goes for security. If you think you're on-prem is safer and you're doing a better job than Microsoft or Google at security, then yeah, good on you. But I hope it makes you sleep better.
Yeah, I think it's a false sense of security. Now, granted, I'm operating under the assumption that I believe those are false sense of security. I think they're false assumptions to make. My point of view, I guess it sounds like we're about on the same page here, that my point of view is I got a lot more faith and a lot more trust in those guys than me having to manage it myself. So,
oh, totally. I'm in the same boat.
Plus I know that I'm going to get some money back if they screw it up. So, I mean, it's a, they've got an SLA, they're financially backed. Whereas me, you know, if my laptop blows up because I'm putting new video drivers on it, then I'm just completely,
you write yourself a check.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's usually writing somebody else a check to go recover the data.
There you go. So on cloud security, one of the things I've come across a couple of times is people asking, so for providers like Microsoft and Amazon that provide infrastructure as a service, you know, basically machines in the cloud, right, where you control the operating system and you can run whatever you want on there, do you need things like firewalls and proxies and all the kinds, some of the same sorts of infrastructure that you typically need on premises to publish the services that they provide, or the, you know, the website that you're delivering or whatever externally, to keep those VMs safe and secure? We actually got a question, I think vaguely related to this, so we're going to use it. Why don't we go on here and play that? This is from Ben Satori from OBS in Australia. So let's run that question. As you can probably tell, it's still Chris here. And the reason for this is we had a little bit of a problem with Ben's question, and that I said that we were going to play it, but in fact, Ben had actually emailed us instead. So I'm going to go ahead and read this question out. This is from Ben Satori. Hi guys, really enjoying the show. Nice to hear an almost Aussie accent on a great global podcast. Winky smiley face. I have a two-part question. Question one, do you recommend a different server architecture for the same SharePoint workload in Azure versus on-prem? And question two, I'm starting to get customers asking to move or build their SSO, ADFS and proxies, infra, for 365 in an Azure environment, sometimes for HA, sometimes to shift the workload off-prem. Is there a difference in the number of servers required for this compared to on-prem? All right, so thanks, Ben, for sending that question in. It was a two-part question, but we're going to address the first part of his question, which was, do you recommend a different server architecture for the same SharePoint workload in Azure versus on-prem? And although we're not going to directly address his question specifically about SharePoint, I thought it was an interesting question because it brings up this concept of, do you need a different server architecture in the cloud versus on-prem? And really, that's a valid question no matter what you're delivering, at least in my view. And so how it relates to firewalls and proxies, you know, typically in SharePoint on-premises, you would that you wanted to publish externally for, say, a website or a series of extranet sites, or even just access for your employees to the intranet from an external location, you typically need to publish that somehow externally. And so there's a number of techniques for doing that. You could put your SharePoint servers in your DMZ, or just directly publish them on the internet. Probably not the greatest of ideas. But most people will put them behind firewalls, and most people will also look at doing things like reverse proxies, where you say, I want, say this SharePoint site out on the internet, and it goes through this particular reverse proxy box that protects it. Maybe authentication is done at the reverse proxy layer first before the request goes to SharePoint, so you've got some sort of pre-authentication. And there's a number of products that do this, like UAG, and the web application proxy in Windows Server 2012 R2, and a bunch of other third-party products, non-Microsoft products too. But the question is, do you need that stuff in the cloud? And so this is a common, quite a common question, because people really don't understand what Microsoft is doing for you in terms of security of those VMs and what you need to do yourself. And so if you go create a virtual machine in Azure, it's very easy to do. You go up into the Azure portal and say, I want to provision a new VM, and you get to pick from a set of templates, or you can build your own and upload it, or start with a base build and sort of script out building it up. But the Azure portal sort of abstracts a lot of these concepts away from you. But one of the things you get for VMs is the ability to say, I want to open these particular ports to this VM. And really, in effect, what it's doing is configuring a bunch of firewall rules for you. And so first up, I would say it's pretty unlikely you would need to go in and put in your own firewall. Like, I think that's the first point of note. It's not out of the realm of possibility that you might want to do it just for an extra layer of security. But I would say for the average usage scenario that firewalls are not required. That Microsoft is doing a bunch of that for you, and you can jump in there and configure your firewall, what ports you let through and so forth. The other part is reverse proxies. And reverse proxies, like I mentioned, give you the ability to publish a site externally on, a different URL. And so a good example of this is intranet access. So internally, you might say HTTP, my awesome intranet. And externally, you want users to get to myawesomeintranet.contoso.com, right? And so you might use a reverse proxy to proxy that intranet site out to the wide world. That is certainly possible to do in a cloud system like Azure, and where you might want to sort of have your VMs behind a reverse proxy for whatever reason. Some of the same rules might apply in the cloud, like pre-authentication is a good one. So maybe you want to pre-authenticate access to your SharePoint boxes, and you might use the web application proxy in Windows Server to do that with ADFS, for example, for auth. So that could be a very valid reason to use a reverse proxy. So although I sort of said, firewalls, maybe not so much, reverse proxies, I think there's a better argument for that, but really depends on your scenario and needs. Any thoughts on this stuff?
Not really. This is the reverse proxies and firewalls and stuff. This is usually where it's a bit over my head, and I usually get somebody else involved that knows more about it, such as yourself. So I learned a lot from what you just said. So I'm not even going to try to fake it like I know what I'm talking about here. It's not a good idea.
Well, the reason I think it's kind of an interesting topic is because it's kind of this crossover point between on-premises and the cloud, and it's not clear cut. You can't necessarily just say, no, you don't need any of these things, but it's not clear cut to say, yes, you do as well. So it's kind of where infrastructure guys, and I'm no expert in this stuff either, right? It's, I know enough to be dangerous, but it's really where you want to get your infrastructure team involved and find out exactly sort of what you need. And it really depends on the scenario.
Yep.
But it definitely is interesting because it's kind of that crossover between do stuff in the cloud versus on-prem, and what pieces are common and what do you need the same. I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
It's also fascinating because, you might choose to implement things the same way in the cloud as you do on-prem. You might want to make some changes as well, but I think it brings the ability for people to do some of the same sorts of things that they do on-prem in the cloud, and you know, things like ADFS and using VMs in the cloud for that, reverse proxies that hook up to it, and pre-auth and SharePoint in the cloud and things as well.
So
righty-ho. I think that's it with what we got for today. I think we've had a really interesting discussion. We had a question from Ben. I urge others to send in additional questions. If you have any feedback or notes for us or comments you want to make, head up to the blog at microsoftcloudshow.com and leave us a comment on this episode, and we'll take a look at those and see if we can and address them. I heard in the elevator just yesterday at work, I was interviewing somebody, and he said that he listened to our podcast, which I was like, that's pretty cool. So shout out to you know who you were. Thanks for listening.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.